Hello, my name is Kayla Verhoeven, and today we'll do part one of the News Gazette, and today is June the 19th of 2026. We're going to go ahead and start off with Hood to Hood Mentoring, Father's Day, by Luke Taylor. Champagne, jiu-jitsu instructor, author, and father of nine, with another on the way, DeLawrence Alla wears a variety of hats. A self-described North Indian, meaning he's from Champaign North End. Alla graduated from Centennial High School and then spent years living across the Midwest, from Ohio to Missouri and Indiana. He paid a visit back to Champaign-Urbana when his mother passed away and ultimately realized he wanted to move back to be closer to two of his sons. "I don't have any kids. I only have nine children," Alla said. "I don't always call them kids, because kids are crazy, and they're not crazy." Alla, now 51, was only 16 when he first became a father. Times have changed since then, and so has he. Alongside 11 other local fathers, Alla will be recognized with a Hoodie Award from Hood to Hood Mentoring on Sunday. This year's group of Fathers of the Year includes Johnny Campbell, Anthony Green, Terry Gerard, Carlos Harvey, Marcus Johnson, Terrell Keel, Mark Levi, E. Martell Miller, Caleb Smith, Trajan Williams, and Sam Taylor, who is being honored. Fathers. They'll be celebrated with the ceremony, at Hood to Hood at 3 p.m. on Sunday. Alla speaks of still being in math class and being a parent. "The adjustment from being a young man trying to be active in my kid's life and then being an older, responsible guy trying to be active in their life, I like to say I'm an educator," Alla said. "The father position always is the ultimate one, so I always have that hat on. That is one thing that crosses over into multiple parts of Alla's life, education. He first got into training jiu-jitsu after he was interviewing for an entirely unrelated job and knew the interviewer and had some concerns about an employment gap in his resume. She asked him a general question about himself, and Alla figured she was attempting to figure out if he was dependable and consistent outside of lacking work for time. It dawned on me that I'm always working out and I'm always training. Maybe I should make that work for myself," he said. Alla has been practicing jiu-jitsu since he was young, inspired by martial arts action movies that he still enjoys today. At AKOSA Academy, the dojo he owns and operates in Champaign, he finds that he instructs more girls than boys these days, and more of the kids are inspired by video games than movies. "I always say my place is where boys come to have their egos destroyed, and the girls there and the women are very sufficient and efficient," Alla said. He's not sure why the demographics shook out that way, but he recognizes that people want to be empowered, and that's why they pursue martial arts training. "Consistency in training aligns with his values as a parent, providing consistency and security to children. On top of all of that, he's a writer. His books, Mind Diet and Mind Diet 2, aim to encourage young people to think more about what they're putting into their minds. We're into nutrition, and we're so big on fitness. So when I say mind diet, it gives the person a chance to say, 'What are you talking about?'" he said. The first book is short, what Alla described as a quick punch on the chin to get people thinking about self-improvement. The second, subtitled Habits, Rituals, Ways, pays attention to the idea of changing ongoing behavior with a focus on improvement. Alla doesn't care to talk about himself, he says, but likes to see himself as a logical physician, someone working to help others get their minds right. "I'm just the result of the fathers that were in my life. You know what I mean? My grandfather, my brother, my brothers, my uncles, and my older cousins." He can trace many things about himself to the exact mentor figures he learned them from. "I have made a change because my sensei told me, 'Man, black belts don't act like that. I care about love and family because that's what my grandfather was into. I'm a giver because that's what my father was into,'" Alla said. Moving on now to some weather news. The city of Sullivan, the recent rain, not enough to lift water restrictions. Wells being drilled in search for another supply. By Jana Wiersamy in Sullivan. After recent storms, including one that temporarily knocked out power in town Wednesday night, some residents might be wondering why the city of Sullivan is still under drought restrictions, even as rain gauges fill up. The trouble is, it's just not that simple, said Mayor Mike Mossman. The aquifer will take, more than a year to recharge, he said. It's just the water has to soak into the ground and get down into the aquifer. Over the last 2 years, our aquifer here has dropped 15 feet, so it's going to take a lot of water to soak in to get down into the earth to recharge the aquifer. It's a slow process. While the drastic part of the drought started about 8 months ago, the area has been dealing with a drought for about 3 months, 3 years at least, Mossman estimated. But we still had plenty of water, so it just came to a head about probably the first of the year, I would say, he told the News Gazette. According to the city's Facebook page, the water emergency declared by the city council in February has been extended through August the 1st. The following restrictions are currently in place. No lawn watering or irrigation. No filling up hot tubs, swimming pools, or ponds for the first time city-provided water. Residents are instructed to find companies that can bring water in from outside of town. No car washing at home. Local car wash businesses remain open. No pre-serving water at restaurants unless it is requested by the customer. And deductible leaks must be repaired within 72 hours or water service may be shut off. Additionally, residents are encouraged to generally be mindful of their water use, with the city offering voluntary tips, such as only running full dishwasher and laundry loads, taking shorter showers, and using rain barrels to collect water for outside watering. The original emergency declaration from February states that anyone who uses city water for turf irrigation, pool filling, or personal car washing is subject to a fine of up to $750 per offense. However, Mossman said that is probably more of a deterrent. When asked about rumors that the city is threatening to turn off the power of individuals who don't pay fines, he replied, "I don't find that to be true. I don't know that we've even ever talked about that as a council, and we have not issued any fines as of this date. We are just asking people to do the right thing, and most of them have complied very well." He acknowledged that conserving water is an inconvenience and a disruption of residents' daily routines. However, he hopes that if everyone does their part, the length of the emergency might be shortened. Additionally, the city has drilled several test wells in search of a separate water supply and is currently drilling a permanent well close to the water treatment plant, he told the News Gazette. There is also another location the city is hopeful about that is farther away from the plant. However, this means that it would take additional time to pipe the water to the facility for treatment, Mossman said. It's not a fast process, but we're doing everything we can do day to day to find not only a solution for the present, but a solution for 30 and 40 years down the road, because this is something that's going to be ongoing, he said. This is something that we don't take lightly. Top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy staff writer Luke Taylor. Bellying up with. On Fridays, we'll spotlight the men and women serving up cold ones and conversation in our neck of the woods. Let us know about your favorite bartender by emailing itaylor@newsgazette.com. You might have seen her serving and bartending at any number of restaurants around Champaign-Urbana, but for the last 2 years, Molly Pritchard has been behind the bar at Biagi's. I've had people come in and say that our bar is pretty underrated because you don't think of the bar when you think of coming in to dine here. You think of a nice sit-down restaurant, Pritchard said. Still, she said that the bar has earned a loyal fan club of regulars who she has enjoyed getting to know in her time there. Biagi's has its own custom cocktail list, and Pritchard said the blackberry basil mojito and basil lemon drop are popular. But she also enjoys making classic, like old fashions and martinis that people can customize. Pritchard has been a bartender or server for a long time, and she doesn't see herself switching careers. She likes working directly with people. I really enjoy being around people. Usually they're celebrating, though not always. Sometimes they're mourning, and they need a friendly face, she said. That's what I'm here for. Her favorite times at the restaurant are when people hold celebrations there, be it weddings, family get-togethers, or Christmas parties. I just like to create a good time for people, to create a happy but relaxing environment, and I think we do that here, she said. Outside of the bar, Pritchard spends most of her time with family or dabbling in different craft projects that she enjoys. Moving on now to some news and history. Area history in 1926. The Champaign County Farm Bureau welcomed soil directors from Broadlands, Friesland, Ivesdale, Rantoul, Scott, Sidney, Somer, and Tolono at the University of Illinois experimental plots on the J.T. Smith Farm near Tolono. Participants inspected many varieties of legumes, clover, and alfalfa planted in both sweet land, alkaline soil, and in sour land, acidic soil. In 1976, a $30,000 lawsuit was filed in Champaign Circuit Court against Bonnie's, 707 South 6th Street in Champaign, for allegedly serving an excessive amount of liquor to a man who was charged with reckless homicide in the death of an Urbana woman. In 2011, Illinois is on the verge of approving a Medicaid budget that could mean doctors and hospitals may have to wait months to be paid, and poor people have a harder time finding care while the government falls deeper into a financial hole. The budget passed by lawmakers last month promises doctors and hospitals the same pay that they get now. The same number of poor Illinoisans will be entitled to virtually the same services. But the amount of money set aside for Medicaid falls about $1.2 billion short of covering all those costs. International history, today's highlight. On June 19th in 1865, Union troops arrived in Galveston, Texas, with news that the Civil War was over and that all remaining enslaved people in Texas were free, an event celebrated as the Juneteenth national holiday in the United States. On this date in 1910, the first ever Father's Day in the United States was celebrated in Spokane, Washington. President Richard Nixon would make Father's Day a federally recognized annual observation through a proclamation in 1972. In 1953, Julius Rosenberg, 35, and his wife, Ethel, 37, convicted of conspiring to pass U.S. atomic secrets to the Soviet Union, were executed at Sing Sing Prison in Ossining, New York, and they were the first American civilians to be executed for espionage. In 1963, Soviet cosmonaut Valentina Tereshkova completed her historic flight as the first woman in space, landing safely at the conclusion of the Vostok 6 mission. In the day book, the almanac, there are 195 days left in the year. Today is Juneteenth. Notable birthdays: Hall of Fame auto racer Shirley Mildowey is 86. Nobel Peace Prize laureate Aung San Suu Kyi is 81. Author Tobias Wolff is 81. Author Salman Rushdie is 79. Actor Felicia Rashad is 78. Rocker singer Ann Wilson of Heart is 76. Actor Kathleen Turner is 72, which singer and choreographer, TV personality Paula Abdul is 64, TV host Laura Spencer, 55, actor Gene Durjardin is 54, actor Robin Tooney is 54, basketball Hall of Famer Dirk Nowitzki is 48, and actor Zoe Saldana is 48. Rapper Macklemore, 43, Paul Dano, 42, and NBA player Jordan Poole, 27. Moving on now to some national and world news, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, data centers are given priority. Federal regulators order grid operators to speed power to energy-hungry AI hubs, leave states in control of rates. Washington, AP. Federal regulators on Thursday ordered regional grid operators to help large energy users connect more quickly to the nation's inefficient and aging electric transmission system, a step they said is needed to accommodate surging demand from power-hungry artificial intelligence data centers. Energy Secretary Chris Wright had urged the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to act in an effort to help the United States better compete with China for superiority in the fastest-growing AI sector. Tech companies and data center developers welcomed the chance to connect faster to the country's power supply for the biggest energy users ever built in the United States, including some that consume more than a small city. Utilities, states, and regional grid operators had worried that the Republican administration's plan would remove their authority to manage the process. But the commission said the order leaves states in control of retail electric rates, terms, and conditions. Clean energy advocates have urged regulators not to undermine state-level efforts to require the use of renewable energies. The commission's actions come as a backlash grows against data centers over concerns about the massive amounts of energy and water they would use, and fears about noise and air pollution, water shortages, and a loss of open space or farmland. Unanimous vote and affordability. Members of the commission voted unanimously to direct six regional grid operators to ensure that AI data centers and other large power users are able to connect to the transmission system in a timely and orderly manner. Laura Sweat, an appointee of President Donald Trump, who chairs the commission, called the vote historic and said it would push the country's electricity market into the future while respecting states' rights, protecting reliable electric services, and shielding ratepayers from shouldering the costs of connecting big grid power users to the grid. I know that Americans across the country are concerned about affordability, and so are we, Sweat said, referring to the five-member commission. As a chair, I am taking extremely seriously the mission that Congress has entrusted to us to ensure that rates are reasonable. The vote comes 8 months after Wright asked the independent agency to take more control over ensuring that the vast network of massive computing warehouses needed to power the AI are connected quickly to high-voltage transmission lines. Wright hailed the commission's action, saying it would remove barriers, accelerate development, and ensure America has affordability, reliable, and secure energy needed to power a new era of prosperity. Under the commission's order, data centers would pay the full cost of any grid upgrades needed for their connection. But that order can do little to address the tightening energy supplies that are driving up electricity bills in some areas and raising warnings of blackouts as the construction of data centers outpaces the speed of new power plants coming online to serve them. Robert Montillo, a lawyer who represents data centers, said the most important message from the commission's action is that AI has fundamentally changed the electricity landscape. The grid and a prior policy were not built for the pace and scale of demand that we're seeing from AI infrastructure, and FERC is signaling that standing still is no longer an option. The six regional grid operators under the order serve 200 million Americans, or two-thirds of the commission's jurisdiction. It, meanwhile, invited utilities that handle their regional transmission systems to also participate, and analysts said the agency would eventually pressure them to. A search for power. Tech giants are scrambling to find enough power for their data centers and report that in some places, it will take years to connect to the grid. The Edison Electric Institute, which represents investor-owned electric utilities, said the commission's order builds on regional and state processes already underway while supporting flexibility and innovation. Besides power bottlenecks, the tech industry is running into widespread opposition from communities where residents don't want to live next to or near a data center. More than 4,000 data centers now operate in the United States, according to one estimate, with an additional 3,000 planned or under construction. Trump has tried to deflect public concerns about AI, seeing the fast-evolving technology as crucial for the United States to attract foreign investment and maintain its economic and military prowess. He signed an executive order this month establishing framework for the federal government to vet the national security risks of the most advanced AI systems for up to a month before their public release. In December, the commission took an earlier step to help data center operators get electricity quickly, voting to allow them to effectively plug a data center directly into a power plant, and Thursday's order sought to ensure that option is accessible around the country. Power demands from data centers. The commission told grid operators to respond within 30 days on how they will ensure that there is adequate power supply for new and future data centers, and within 60 days on plans to integrate large power users in line with the new guidelines. Sweat told reporters after the meeting that she hoped faster connection processes are in effect in as little time as possible. She didn't set an exact timeline. Jeff Dennis, executive director of the Electricity Customer Alliance, said the Federal Commission's order is responsive, in particular to big power users and state regulators. Tech giants are confronting unclear rules to connect data centers to high voltage transmission systems, while states need more clarity on who should bear the cost of regional transmission projects approved at the federal level, he said. Rob Gramlich, a Washington, D.C.-based energy consultant, said states should quickly develop rules to accommodate large power users and prevent cost shifts to residential and business customers. The commission could assert broader jurisdiction over interconnection issues if states don't act quickly, he said. Data from the Electric Power Research Institute shows that data centers now account for about 5% of the United States electricity demand, but that could triple by 2035. Tech companies have continued to raise their spending on building and equipping data centers, but there is evidence that construction is lagging and projects are hitting roadblocks, including permitting delays, growing local opposition or bottlenecks around gas turbines, transformers, and skilled labor. Moving on now to the U.S. Supreme Court. Justices have no crime for marijuana users to have guns. Washington. The Supreme Court ruled Thursday against a broad federal ban on gun ownership by marijuana users, the latest in a line of firearm cases from a court that has expanded gun rights. The justices decided unanimously in favor of Ali Daniel Hamayi, a Texas man who argued that a law barring guns from anyone who regularly uses illegal drugs violates the Second Amendment. Justice Neil Gorsuch wrote that his opinion narrowly limits the government's power to take guns away from drug users who are not considered dangerous. Hamani, who was not charged with any other crimes or of accused of using the weapon under the influence, is thankful he finally has closure, lawyer Zachary Newland said. The decision is a loss for President Donald Trump's Republican administration, which had defended the 1968 law despite arguing against other gun restrictions. Its core argument fails under every measure, Gorsuch wrote. The law was originally meant to keep guns away from dangerous people, but the millions of people who now use marijuana can't all be characterized that way, Gorsch wrote. While recreational use is illegal under federal law, about half of states allow it, and cannabis use for health purposes is widespread. Whatever one thinks of these developments, the federal government has not just tolerated them, it helped fuel them, Gorsuch wrote. All of which leaves it awkwardly positioned to suggest that millions of Americans who now regularly use marijuana are categorically and unusually dangerous. The law was also used in a case against Hunter Biden, who was convicted in Wilmington, Delaware, of buying a gun while addicted to cocaine in 2018. He was later pardoned by his father, Democratic President Joe Biden. Someone addicted to an illegal drug could potentially still be prosecuted after Thursday's decision. We do not address efforts to ban addicts or those presently intoxicated from possessing a firearm, Gorsuch wrote. Prosecutors could charge a marijuana user if they had evidence that the person was dangerous, he said. Recreational use remains illegal on a federal level, even after the Trump administration reclassified medical marijuana as a less dangerous drug in April. The case made for some unusual political alliances. The American Civil Liberties Union and the National Rifle Association supported Himani's case, as did cannabis legalization groups such as NORML. On the other side, there were gun safety groups, including Everytown, that usually oppose the administration on the Second Amendment issues. The ACLU applauded the ruling, saying that nearly half of Americans have reported using marijuana at some point in their lives. The court has sent a strong message that the government cannot criminalize the conduct of large numbers of people by making categorical and unfounded assumptions about whether they are dangerous, said Cecilia Wang, legal director at the ACLU. NORML applauded the decision as a vindication of personal freedom, and the Second Amendment Foundation called it a major victory for gun owners. The group Smart Approaches to Marijuana, which opposes legalization of the drug, condemned it. While the justices in this case appear to be most concerned with historical battles over Second Amendment rights, public health and safety are the collateral damage in this decision, said CEO Kevin Sabat. Gun control groups were more measured, with Everytown saying decisions still recognize that drugs and guns can make for a dangerous mix. It is rare to see standalone criminal charges filed against people accused solely of owning guns and using drugs, though they are more often filed against people also accused of other crimes. The opinion is the latest in a series of firearm cases to reach the Supreme Court since its landmark ruling, expanding gun rights in 2022, which led to a wave of challenges around the country. Moving on now to Vermilion County Courts, former Danville man gets 20 years for sexually assaulting a child, by Jennifer Bailey. Danville, a former man, Danville resident, has been sentenced to 20 years in prison after pleading guilty in April to predatory criminal sexual assault, a Class X felony. Under the terms of the plea agreement, accepted by Judge Mark S. Goodwin, Brian Torres, 35, faced a maximum possible sentence of 25 years. At sentencing, evidence was presented about his prior conviction for aggravated battery, causing great bodily harm. Torres must serve 85% of the sentence, followed by 3 years to life of mandatory supervised release, to be determined by the Prison Review Board. He will also have to register as a sex offender for life. The charges stem from an incident in Danville, where police were called to OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville for a report of predatory criminal sexual assault of a minor. The victim told police Torres assaulted her on February the 8th of 23. The courageous victim has helped to remove a predator from our community, said Vermilion County State's Attorney Jacqueline Lacey. My thoughts remain with this victim and their loved ones as they move forward from this devastating crime. Until next time, friends, my name is Kayla Verhoeven, and thank you for listening.